Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CoinPass podcast, where we talk about crypto, finance, business, and blockchain. I'm your host, Jeff Hancock, CEO of CoinPass.com, and today we're talking about the importance of communities in B2C businesses. Now, this is a much wider topic than we usually talk about because we're not just talking about tokens here, we're talking about startups as well. So, when I'm out there in the startup land, this one's specifically for you. Joining me today, my guest is from Amazix. They are offering innovation solutions for all the pain points in the industry as a full service blockchain consultancy, covering everything from marketing, PR, legal advisory to corporate structuring. Joining me today is Annie Alexander. She's experienced in multilingual marketing and she's passionate about bridging new technologies to its end users. She's provided a track record in building and growing tech startups from scratch with very small marketing budgets and covering their community and converting their communities into very loyal fans. Annie, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me over, Jeff.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for being here. I mean, you've got a very impressive background, very impressive profile on LinkedIn. If anyone not following Annie, they should be. From your background and long career, Annie, you've been working with startups for quite a long time now, at the Google Launchpad, Virgin Startups, writing your own books, your own podcast. What specific about, startups and specifically blockchain and token startups, what are you really passionate about?
I think there is a little bit of specifics with specific, with the blockchain startups, because I feel like unlike other industries or tech in general, because of the journey we had and because the market is not mature enough, most of the startups don't yet understand the importance of marketing. So there is a little bit more work in terms of just explaining why they need something and marketing at the moment and from the very start, versus when I worked with other startups, I didn't have that issue because they understood it from the very beginning. But other than that, things that are quite similar to any of the other areas of the tech startups.
Right. And you're a well, I would consider you, but I think a lot of people would consider you a thought leader in the specific space and the specific kind of crossover when we talk about startups and blockchain startups. And what do you think is, I suppose, if you had to put on one main important point, what's the main thing that they should consider and think about from kind of day one, from thinking about the idea, coming up with the premise or the vision over a coffee table, to what's the first thing marketing-wise they need to consider in terms of even getting their startup off the ground as an idea?
Yeah, I think the very first thing is a reality check and understanding whether there is a market fit for it, product market fit. Because very often you may be very excited about the idea, it may be something that you're personally very interested in, but you have to get some kind of proofs that people will need it and people will use that product once you build it. And rather, if the answer is no, you'd rather know about it, in the very beginning, then a year after you've put too much resources, time, and effort into building something that no one would be using.
So it's the traditional kind of startup fallacy, creating a solution for a problem that doesn't yet exist.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you almost get trapped into, well, I can make a market for this problem that might exist in the future and people will buy into it early, right? Something like that. So, I
Yeah.
mean, this is probably something that we saw, quite a lot of in kind of the late 2016, 2017, during the ICO boom. What's something, I suppose, from that particular time period that you picked up, how people were, creating their projects, marketing their projects to, what were essentially just token investors, not real users?
Well, I feel like what we had in 2017, apart from the amazing model of democratization of the investments and anyone being able to raise funds and anyone being able to invest in companies, the problem there was that most of the white papers were written as what I call like fiction, sometimes non-fiction, right? Science fiction, white papers.
Science fiction, very good.
The thing was like no one, like most of the founders didn't really do the homework of understanding, okay, let's imagine I have raised the funds, I have the amount that I'm raising, and usually the amounts were way higher than whatever you would need to build. So no one knew exactly how much was needed for building the thing. It was just an amount of what they would like to raise, right? But even after that, very few, if you ask them, knew how they were going to execute the thing. So I feel like that was the problem. It wasn't even a product market fit that we spoke about in the beginning. it was like a broader problem of just making a wish list of the things that they would love to build, but not specifically knowing whether it was even possible or not.
So kind of what you're saying is that, you know, what I suppose worked in 2017, you know, that kind of reality doesn't exist now. There's a greater, you know, maturity in the market. People are able to do due diligence. They're able to, I suppose, without that recorded history of that boom, you know, people that didn't go through it can definitely go back and witness the results. You know, tokens that went from, you know, zero to hero completely overnight. Tokens that raised 15, 20, 30 million on a, you know, what was essentially a 15-page white paper. Which is excerpts of some other ones I've picked up along the way. And you can almost pick up all the templates from all of those from those websites that are out there, you know, very, very cheaply now. Some of them are 15, 20 pound templates if you know where to look. And yeah, there was a real sort of, you know, this is what I will build when I get the funding. Not this is the problem I want to solve to create something better to solve a problem. And there was a lot of rinse and repeat that, really, unfortunately. And how does the community and community building aspect kind of come into that sort of startup culture? So you've got an idea, you know, does it have a vision? Does it have a place in the market? You know, have we been able to, like, you know, I suppose test that market a little bit, you know, and find interest? How does a business create a fan base or a community of diehard fans?
So I truly believe that communities will break or make your project, right? So if you're a B2C project, in any industry, but specifically in blockchain as well, it's applicable, you do need a community. And the reason why you need them is not only it's gonna give you the emotional support along the way if you take them with the journey with you, they also will feel emotionally invested and they will feel like they are taking part of the whole process, which means that they will be more inclined to use your product and be the first adopters of the product because they have been interacting with the team, they have been part of some a community, they were around the same purpose, right? And then that will also bring the huge benefit of them being part of your marketing team and, you know, also cutting marketing budgets and having an ambassador program, having the community play a role in spreading the word, because third party endorsements are way more credible than if you put that budget into advertising and the banners, right?
Couldn't agree more with that, yeah. Because, I mean, how many banners have I clicked in my lifetime? Probably three. And how much does it cost to put that banner out there? Very, very expensive. Whereas how expensive is it to take, you know, some of your allocated time out from, you know, marketing activities, from events, from whatever it is, to, you know, really look after the people that are essentially going to pay your salary, essentially going to pay your rent and your lifestyle and grow the business for you. They're, you know, your first 100 users, your first 1,000, your first whatever, those are your foot soldiers and they're the most important. And what I've seen in, I suppose, my own experience, what I've seen work really, really well, if we take something like Monzo, where they were doing, you know, their business was essentially a closed loop alpha business for the first year, and they pulled on their first, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 users purely by word of mouth. And they tended to be all tech engineers or tech guys or developers, whatever. And if you went to a bar, and this is something that I found in my own network, is that the only people with these orange cards were tech people. So I'd go out on, say, a Thursday, you know, you'd go for a pint after work or something, and my friend would whip out his very, very bright orange card that you literally can't ignore. You're like, what is that? It's like, oh, it's Monzo, it's this bank, it's on my phone. Oh, cool. How can I get one? You know, and that's a conversation that's completely offline. It's completely for free. There's no ad traffic. And at the time, they had a website that you could only kind of look at. You couldn't sign up to it. And I thought that was a really, really super interesting concept.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They had a waiting list and they were opening up the, you know, the new accounts in batches. And then you had to wait for it. You had a huge anticipation. And the more people you referred to, the higher in the queue you were jumping up, I guess, if I remember correctly. So it was really, really well. That is why I think in the blockchain space, what is important is to shift this mindset from community of token buyers to community of your end users. Because ICOs were all about community of token buyers. And the way we were doing marketing, I mean, I haven't done it that way, but in general, what was the common kind of marketing practice for ICOs was marketing the token. not the product, not what you were building. Many people did realize and were comfortable with the fact that the people in their community will only keep the token, you know, in best case, hold the token or trade the token, but they will never use their products. And they were okay with that, right? Because the whole purpose of it was just to raise the funds through the token. And very often later on, the community was becoming a burden because, you know, they already raised the funds. They knew that these people will never use their product. But they were there, so they had to take care of them somehow. So for many, it was an irritating thing to carry on. It was already there, right?
An irritating thing of looking after your clients. That's a surprising burden.
But then, you know, they weren't even going to be their clients because that's not how they were attracted to become part of the community. Mm. So now I think by shifting the mentality from I'm building a community of token buyers, and ICOs are not happening now, so I don't need a community. I do believe strongly that especially if you are a B2C project in the blockchain space, you need to start building the community from day one. Even if you are not going to issue a token, it doesn't really matter because you're building a community of your future users. And then you can use this community even because the argument usually is, I will go to market a year later. I still have a whole year with nothing to market. But it doesn't matter because what you are building, the community can help you with that. Mm. So, I mean, it first of all, with validation of the idea, but also they can better test it beforewards. They can, you know, you can make surveys. They can provide feedback in terms of features, which features are more important to them, which ones to release first, which ones to release with the next update. And, you know, testing the bugs, providing feedback and everything else, right? Because you eventually can do the same thing in different ways. But if you, while you are building it, you take into account the feedback and build exactly what they want the way they want it, they will definitely use it once it's out. Mm. So I do believe that the first shift of the mindset is important from the community of token buyers to community of end users, and then realizing what you can do with this community.
And I suppose, is there a way that a token user or a, you know, let's call them a product user for a better saying for a moment, can the, you know, the token investor, the product user, can they in any sort of shape or form be in the same group? Because if they're an early investor and going to be a user, ultimately they're, you know, incentivized to use that product. You know, they're technically kind of, you know, paying for the service early. They're, you know, funding your startup costs and also then become part of your marketing team. Did you notice any specific kind of projects or any other things you've seen where they are in fact one and the same?
The projects have marketed their ICO in a way that when the story goes, it's the story of what you are building and what you are building it for and who you are building it for. Then if you position it that way, that guys, you don't buy the token in order to make money, you buy the token in order to be part of this thing and help us build this because you think that it's something useful, you think that it's gonna change. It may not even be useful for you specifically, but it may have some kind of social impact and you believe in the purpose. And then, because eventually ICOs were crowdfunding, like a Kickstarter on a blockchain, right? And the whole crowdfunding idea is, okay, guys, come over, let's get together, help me build this thing or help me produce this product or whatever, right? If that's how you position yourself, no matter whether, you know, it includes a token or doesn't include a token, people will already be buying the story and buying the idea and willing to be part of it. And even if they are not using it themselves, they will let others know who are more relevant to become users. So you what needs them.
Okay, so I suppose for, you know, anyone in this kind of space now, whether it's crypto or blockchain or not crypto at all, would you say that, you know, that kind of token style fundraising route is the best, or are there other vehicles that would perform better? So a crowdfunding route or an angel round or something of that matter might be a better suit for a startup looking to raise funds?
Yeah, so before we get to the crowdfunding, I just, you know, just to highlight the importance of the community is when COVID happened, which brands were the ones that, you know, got the most support and you know, both financially and emotionally, those brands who already had very loyal communities next to them, right? People were saying, I still go and take away from my favorite coffee shop because I love the experience, I love the brand, I want to continue going there, I don't want post-COVID that thing to be closed, so I'm supporting it, right? And many, many other kind of, you know, examples of the thing. So the community is gonna, you don't even know some of the benefits of the community because, you know, you can't foresee the situations. But if you have this group of people who are your fans and backing you up, there will always be a situation where you will see the intangible benefits, which will be priceless, right? In terms of funding, unfortunately, I always say that both sides were very guilty in kind of screwing up the whole ICO model, right? Because unfortunately, it worked very well, right? People were raising funds in a few minutes. Everyone could invest, everyone could raise funds. Unfortunately, I think the greed was the thing that kind of messed up everything. The greed, both from the founder's perspective and, you know, in terms of raising huge amounts, much more than you needed, in terms of not having the accountability of how you're spending that money and everything else, and all the scammers, you know, are a completely different story. But also the token buyers were very greedy because their main motivation was not really the project, was not really the startup. Their main motivation was making money. So at the end, like the human nature and everything else ended up to a point where right now, I don't believe people trust in ICOs, right? So even if you are a legit project, even if you do everything right, I don't think the ICO model will work because people are more cautious, people have been burned down many times. It's going to be very hard to convince them because everyone has been telling stories. So just stories by themselves will be very hard to sell. IEOs, I feel like they are completely against the blockchain ideology.
I completely agree.
They put too much power in the exchange's hands. And who said that exchanges are more trustable than an ICO founder, right? It's, you never know. It's, again, there is a human factor. If you give too much power to one institution, it's always risky, right? So I'm not very big fan of that. And I've heard, I spoke with many founders who were very, very unhappy with their IEO results. I even had someone mention that they raised, the exchange told that they raised zero, which to me is very kind of strange. But anyway, right? Wow. So at the moment, the way I'm seeing this, and ICOs are very expensive, not applicable to everyone, and et cetera, et cetera. So at the moment, the way we see the market goes is most of the projects are raising traditionally, so through VC funds and angel investors, who kind of are changing the requirements of the game because, you know, they already won't be satisfied just by a white paper, which is written just like that, you know, they plan, they need to make sure that the team is strong enough to execute things, they need some proofs for you know, for the need of the product, they need some proofs of the potential for the growth and everything else, right? So now all these startups are moving into a regular tech startup environment where they weren't before. So it's kind of filtering out the quality of the projects that have potential to raise because they are playing already in the same field. So they have the same requirements. No longer blockchain project is special just because it's using blockchain tech, right? It's just a tech startup, that's it. So, but again, if we're talking about B2C projects and we're thinking about the idea of Kickstarter or crowdfunding, if you are able to pull this off, and it's very hard to do, I'm not saying that it's kind of, you know, an easy task, but if you are able to pull things off in a sense that you have a really good product and you build a very loyal community who is waiting for that product, the very easy, straightforward way from my perspective is pre-sell the product. Introduce an introductory go-to-market launch offer, special benefits and whatever. And if you already have this critical mass of your community who is waiting for the product, just pre-sell it before it's final. Perfect.
Exactly.
And then get the funds in and build it, just like Kickstarter does for products, right? it's the same idea. So that kind of why I'm saying it's hard, because there are two very important components, right? The first thing is you have to build something that is really useful, and it's kind of has a broader implication than just the small crypto community. It's like a more mass B2C thing that people are waiting for. And the second thing is you have to know how to build and grow that community, and not only build and grow it, but also convert them into fans, because it will need a bit, you know, more emotional relationship beyond just being on Telegram group, right?
Well, I think that's true of nearly any product, because there's whichever space you choose to enter these days, with the internet, with social media, with video, with creating content like we're doing right now, it's very easy to be drowned out with, you know, that poor noise, you know, endless banner ads, and etc. And standing out, you know, getting your community to stand out more than someone else's is kind of definitely key. And it's more about giving back than it is taking in. And that's where the, like you say, those perks, you know, pre-selling your services. And there's plenty of Kickstarter campaigns that I've been, you know, exceptionally happy with that I've foretaken in, whether it's just a brand that I like. I didn't really, you know that much about the founders or the business, but for £100 for the first 6 months, I would get X delivered to my house every month once they launched. And I went, for £100, that's really worth it. You know what I mean? Even if I'm only, you know, demoing the product, that's £100 for a UK business that's doing something a little bit different, that's building a cool product, you know. And sometimes that's enough for some people, as long as it's cool. And for the people that want to be involved with that longer term, and this is where I think, you know, you're completely right on an ICO to an IEO, or even, you know, traditional crowdfunding, is that if you take equity in a business, you have to wait until that business is successful in order to exit. There's no liquid market for those secondhand shares till they either get bought out, or an angel investor comes in, or there's an option round, or there's a listing. It doesn't matter. But with the ICO and the IEO model, it was essentially, you know, you were creating an artificial curve of, you know, the early investors that stepped in, whereas the one on the screen stepped in kind of early, kind of here. Then you had, you know, then you had a next round, which is a private round, and then a pre-listing round, and then the final main listing before you get the dumping wave on the other side. And that instant liquidity and that instant gratification is exactly what you said earlier about greed. That greed level of, I don't have to be interested in the product, I don't have to be interested in the brand, it's just a way for me to make very easy, very quick money. And that's essentially where the huge market cap came from in 2018. We went from 250, 300 billion, which is where we've been hovering in 2020 most of the time, up to nearly 850 billion. There were 3,000 tokens at that point in time. And now we're back to essentially where we started pre 2018 bull run. And what have we seen in that time? We've seen three times the amount of tokens even come into existence since then. I think CoinMarketCap lists, what, 6,500 tokens? I don't know what any of them are. 99% of them will fail. And that's kind of just a given at the moment. And what I feel the most, specifically to the startup space, and secondary to, you know, the blockchain and crypto space in general, is that it fails to bring a large amount of professionalism and a large amount of maturity to the space when it's just been kind of a rinse and repeat cycle for quite a long time. And, you know, we're even starting to see this in DeFi just a little bit now as well. It's a great tech, it's built on top of Ethereum, it's the world computer, and etc. And I think the premise of what DeFi is about is tremendous. You know, there's unlimited opportunities there, but unfortunately we've already, you know, even in the last kind of 2 to 3 weeks, with yield farming, with some of the new products that are out, with these experimental ones, they go from hero to zero even quicker now than the ICO boom. And I feel that does more damage to the space than it does to innovate it, because there are some really, really great products out there that are doing, you know, exceptionally great innovation, have amazing communities and amazing teams, but yet still get related to, you know, some of the less impressive stuff in the space.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, right? Like the whole image of the industry.
The image, you're right, yeah.
Things. And the problem is that probably, you know, there are two components to this that could kind of, you know, help with that, right? I keep talking about real marketing in the blockchain space and the lack of it, because unfortunately people keep marketing their projects more or less the same way as in 2017, right? Which was very difficult, because it was very expensive, because it was mainly relying on paid PR. Paying influencers, it was paying media to put the, you know, as a paid PR piece, something about your thing, and it was about PPC and banners and everything else, right? Unfortunately, what's happening now is when you duplicate the whole thing the way that it was done during the ICO, you don't consider the fact that things have changed and the demand is much lower, right? During the ICO, it was easier because you already had the attention of the people. You already had a big pool of people from which you were going to attract token buyers, right? Now, like, the interest have gone down already by default, it's not the same. And the type of people you're trying to attract have changed. I mean, we're talking about VCs who are completely different from Lambo guys, right? So you can't really talk to them with the same.
So Lambo guys, that's very good.
So that's the difference. And this is where, you know, if you look at it from the real tech startup perspective, you have to do real strategic marketing. You have to approach this from a very, you know, PR is just one piece of it. But if you don't have your ducks in a row, what PR does usually, it's just a magnifier, right? It's just amplifying the message. But if they hear the message, if you don't have the right positioning and messaging in place, if you don't have it polished, they hear the wrong message, they get confused. And then in best case, if they go later on to check out your website, if your website is not in the right shape, if you don't have the customer journey leading them to whatever they want to do next, or, you know, if things are not yet shaped, then what you're actually doing is you are paying for more people to know that you're not ready, or you're paying for more people to know that you're not good enough, right? So everything needs to be kind of, you know, I am for marketing and doing stuff from day one, but you, at least the very first stage, should be knowing what your strategy is, knowing how all these pieces work together and where to start activating which one, right? So I think that's one thing, because it's, they keep just doing the paid PR and PPC, which is usually not creating this relationship with your audience, right? It's just the very tactical, straightforward click, sign up, whatever. And on top of it, the media doesn't help much, because if you see the things that are very popular are usually the bad stories, are usually the scary stories, the scammer stories, because by default, they are more exciting, right? The way they have been done, like the missing crypto queen, right? It's entertaining, it's very good quality production, it's like people follow it as a TV series, right? You attract people, even those who are not interested in crypto. But these kind of attractive, interesting stories are crafted on the other side of the thing, right? On the negative side of the thing. Unfortunately, the positive, all these blockchain projects you're talking about with good products, with good communities, etc., they don't do the right marketing to share the right stories, which will attract more people, even non-crypto people, right? So I think maybe to just break this kind of, you know, circle, ideally, what I'm dreaming about is to end up seeing one really big, really successful B2C blockchain project, which uses the blockchain technology, but is for mass market. Everyone loves it. Everyone jumps on board. They don't even know they're using blockchain, you know, and that kind of proves the whole concept, right? And then they look at things, okay, you know, this company was a blockchain company as well, by the way. You know, it's not just all these scammers, right? Because the problem is everyone is focusing on marketing the blockchain as their differentiator, marketing the blockchain as something that is special about them. But that's not the thing, because end users don't care what tech you are using. They care about what you're actually bringing to the market and how you change their lives. Because marketing is just... essentially, it's a story of transformation. They want to know how you're transforming them from where they are to getting where they are dreaming to be. And, you know, and what you're basically doing is you're making money, and your business is in between those, right? During the transformation, because they pay you to be able to get to the other point. So, and whether you use AI or blockchain, or, you know, how it works underneath the whole thing, the person doesn't really care eventually. So it should, the marketing should be about your end user and around your end user, rather than about the founder and about the tech that they are using.
Exactly.
So I think that's another shift that people have to take in order to sort of, you know, get a broader appeal. Because at the moment, most of the successful companies are targeting crypto users, are targeting blockchain crowd, right? So it's echo chambering, like, you know, in between themselves. But if you want to reach broader, like, mass market, then you have to talk the language of the masses. And you're talking the blockchain language, you're kind of, you know, bombarding them with all these tech stories. And they are not attracted because they don't understand it. It's not interesting to them. They don't care. So I think that's where the big shift, the lack of marketing and the right approaches of marketing is what is missing. And also the bad media is kind of not helping either.
So I think what it definitely kind of needs is that, you know, super friendly fintech level maybe of marketing, where we've seen kind of fintech apps and fintech businesses kind of portray themselves in the market as, you know, focusing down on their end user and promoting that journey and what the client, you know, what the user gets as a benefit. And like you say, you know, even if you are a blockchain company, you don't have to put all the lingo in there. One of the biggest ones that I know about is SoftBank in Japan, which is a phone company, and they did a blockchain project between two of their telecom companies for, I think it was MMS and for something else, and basically switched it on overnight. And no one knew any different, but the cost of those two networks talking to each other that used to cost, you know, 7 to 12 cents in terms of per MMS, per message, whatever it is between those networks, went down to, we were talking like less sub 1 cent or whatever. And that's pure tech, you know, innovating that one particular service between, you know, those two trialing brands. But to the end user, they're still sending their MMS messages and their text messages between these two giants of telecom. But now there's a huge direct saving for the telecom provider to provide the service, to do it in a more scalable way, and to eventually do it in a more secure way as well. So they can give, you know, that privacy level back to their users and back to their clients, which they rightly deserve. And I think specifically to that particular use case is that MMS technology has been around a very long time, but it's still used a lot in some of those Asian kind of countries. So that was a prime example of a piece of tech that was innovative and brand new, you know, channeled around the end user to provide maximum value. And a lot of people don't even know they're using it, which is exactly what we're talking about, right?
I think it's nice that you mentioned that, because this kind of proves that, you know, blockchain is not just crypto. And also, you know, another kind of case of why this whole image is probably wrong is because many people identify and think that blockchain and crypto are the same thing, because they aren't enough stories which are, you know, showcasing the usage of the blockchain just as a technology, as a blockchain, without the crypto or financial services related things embedded into them, right? So where you know that blockchain can be used not as a financial service or not as a cryptocurrency.
And this is where I think we got asked this question probably about maybe 18 months ago of, you know, which blockchain is going to, you know, break MasterCard and Visa. They do 20,000 transactions a second and blah, 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 blah. All the stuff we've heard before. And my answer was, well, those bigger companies are probably going to come and join the party. They're going to be investing in that tech and putting it in the background where you may not even see it. You know, their business will get faster and leaner. Hopefully you see some of those profits go back to, you know, worthy needs and causes, you know, more startup, fintechs, charity, etc. And those savings kind of trickle down, much like technology and say Formula One trickles down to cars. And it's going to be those bigger companies that have, you know, the right marketing image, that have an existing user base, that are using the tech in a way to, you know, improve the end product more than anything else. And that's where I think the space will inevitably kind of make it up to a better mainstream audience. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, again, like, you know, I probably, you know, had several complaints during this interview, but I think that it's developing. It's relatively new sphere. I mean, we have to take that into account. And there's loads of elements that are new. There's loads of elements that kind of, you know, will be developing in the future. But from where I'm standing, which is the crossroad between the tech and the marketing, I think the role of the marketing, or not even marketing, like the human side of the tech startup kind of model is missing a little bit in the blockchain space. And the, you know, the idea, many blockchain founders just don't really haven't got this idea that the human side has to be taken care of as well, and it has to be taken care of from the very beginning, because the what happens usually is everyone is obsessed with the building aspect of it and the tech aspect of it, and they forget about everything else until it's done. And very often it's very late to address the other stuff, and or you know, harder to pivot or harder to change, because very often what we have in at Amazix, we have clients coming to us 1 month before the launch to take care of the market. 30 days, I mean, and they want all of it, including building the community, right? And you can't build a community in just 30 days. But then I'm like, how long did you build this thing? A year and a half. And I'm like, oh my God, we have done so many things during the year and a half while So many things need to go parallel, and I understand why they are not attracted to bringing in the human side, because just like I'm not understanding all the details and kind of, you know, I don't have deep knowledge of the technology, they don't have knowledge of the human side, so they don't really realize how beneficial it can be, which is fine. But I also think that not enough people are talking about it, which is why I'm kind of being a bit more vocal about this stuff, because I haven't seen many people cover these topics. And maybe that's another reason why people don't do that, right?
True. So I think that's a really good point. We should end the podcast today. I think we could easily have a part two of this later in the year, to see how maybe some of the target companies we talked about have developed, maybe some other new ideas you come across, and some case studies I think would be awesome. So Annie, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today and sharing your insight and knowledge around this space. Obviously, we've only just scraped the surface. How do people kind of get in touch with you if they want to learn more about what you do and how you can help them?
Well, I mean, my the company website is amazix.com, so you can go there and check out all the services that we provide. And it's not only marketing. We spoke about marketing because that's what I know, and I hate talking about stuff that I don't know about. But you can also get in touch with me on LinkedIn. As Jeff said, I'm quite active there. And my personal website, where I also have a podcast just like Jeff, is annealexander.com.
Awesome. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. It was great to have you, and some great topic and conversation there. If you're listening to the show and maybe you want to come on as a guest one day and talk about trading, crypto, fintech and startups, drop us a tweet at CoinPass Global, or an email podcast@coinpass.com. And one last time, I want to thank Annie for joining me today, and wish her a safe and happy week. Hopefully it starts cooling down in London. It's hot this week. And to all the audience out there, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Thanks for having me.